Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Today on Keeping the Faith, we're talking about frontal temporal degeneration. It's a sort of a new diagnosis, I guess. Often people who have this disease have been diagnosed as Alzheimer's in the past. We're talking with three people. We're talking with Chuck Cowger, former dean of the School of Social Work at University of Missouri in Columbia. He's here in our studios in Champaign-Urbana, and by phone, we're talking in Springfield with Dr. Ron Zeck, that's Z-E-K, and we're talking with a nurse practitioner, Carolyn Hahn Swanson. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Good. We can hear everybody well. That's wonderful. Chuck Cowger, let's start with you. Your wife, Jan, was diagnosed first with Alzheimer's, and then what did you find out about this frontal temporal degeneration?
Well, she was evaluated 6 years ago, almost 6 years ago to the day, in fact. And the two-day evaluation report came back that she either had frontal temporal dementia or she had Alzheimer's, and we were referred to additional scans, et cetera, to determine
that. These are brain scans.
That's right. Uh-huh. And other testing as well.
Okay.
She then received a firm diagnosis of Alzheimer's. This is at the Brain Center at Washington University.
Down in St.
Louis.
In
St. Louis. We went through 3 years of Alzheimer's medications and two clinical trials, including one that was quite invasive for 18 months. It required a spinal every 6 weeks.
A spinal tap, I see.
Spinal tap.
Uh-huh.
I continued to be puzzled by the fact that she had this incredible memory but had all these other symptoms, and I knew nothing about frontal temporal dementia at that point. When we arrived in this community, retired the second time.
And came back to where you'd been on the faculty here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, right?
And where we have kids close by, and
sure.
Kids grew up in this town. And we love Krannert, et cetera. And then at Carl
That's
clinic,
a local hospital,
Assessment was that she had frontal temporal dementia, which opened up a whole new world for me, and it made perfect sense at the time. By the time I begin to read, particularly the symptoms of frontal temporal dementia.
Let's bring in our medical folks from the Department of Neurology at Southern Illinois University, from the med school there in Springfield, Illinois. Dr. Zeck, how current is this diagnosis? Has it always been difficult to distinguish between these two, or is the FTD fairly new?
Well, actually, the FTD was originally identified in 1893 by Arnold Pick. It was called Pick's disease. And what we learned in more recent years is that actually Pick's disease only represents a small percentage of frontal temporal dementia cases. So in the dementia field, you know, it's said that there's 70 different causes of dementia in the elderly and that 50 to 70% of them are Alzheimer's disease. But among the top four, after Alzheimer's disease, there is Lewy body disease, which is related to Parkinson's disease. And then there is frontal temporal dementia and vascular dementia. So frontal temporal dementia is, they're all progressive neurodegenerative conditions that cause dementia, but their initial symptoms are different but overlapping. So with frontal temporal dementia, actually, there's three major subtypes. There's the behavioral variant that presents with changes in personality and behavior very early, whereas in Alzheimer's disease, typically it's early impairment in new learning and memory, recent memory. So that is one of the ways that you can distinguish frontal temporal dementia of the behavioral type from Alzheimer's. But in addition, there's a language type of frontal temporal dementia, actually at least two language types, one called semantic dementia and another called progressive nonfluent aphasia. So those are the three major, and I say major, types of frontal temporal dementias. Often with the behavioral subtype, and by the way, 57% of frontal temporal dementia cases are the behavioral subtype, the other 43% being the two language subtypes. Often the frontal temporal subtypes often early on are confused with psychiatric disorders because of the changes in personality and behavior. So it does take a considerable amount of sophistication, I think, to properly clinically diagnose frontal temporal dementia, because I've been doing this for many years, and I would say it's easier to identify Alzheimer's disease than frontal temporal dementia. And by the way, most in the field would say frontal temporal dementia is not just one disorder. It is a group of disorders.
Now, Dr. Zak, you do research in this, is that correct?
Well, I do research on normal and abnormal cognitive aging because I'm a clinical neuropsychologist. So I have seen many frontal temporal dementia cases clinically because I do clinical diagnostic evaluations, I do the memory testing, etc. I must say that in the past year or two, I've been here at SIU for 27 years, I have seen more young onset dementia cases with over half of them being frontal temporal dementia in the past year or two than in all the other years combined. And I think the main reason for that, or at least part of the reason, is because frontal temporal dementia, the onset tends to be in your late 50s, early 60s, although the onset can be anywhere from 40 to 70 on up. But the age of onset is much earlier than in Alzheimer's disease, which is in the mid to late 70s. So where are the baby boomers? The baby boomers, there are 78 million of us born between 1946 and 1964, and the baby boomers are now in their late 40s, in their 50s, and in their early 60s. In fact, starting in January, 10,000 baby boomers a day are turning age 65, and that will continue to be the case for the next 18 years. That's why I believe we're seeing, at least I'm seeing, so many more frontal temporal dementia cases now than in the past.
Dean Cowger, when your wife, Jan, first started exhibiting some of the symptoms, what were some of the first things you noticed?
Indiscreet behaviors in public situations, referring to people who were excessively overweight as being fat
and saying it so
in
they
public,
could, where they would hear it,
where they would hear it, and not understanding when I would respond that this was inappropriate.
Shouldn't say that. And tell people about her background. What
she also was an academic and a dean. Her area was in child welfare. Had incredibly high energy all her life. Sometimes was at one point she was a director of the research portion of the Parent Infant Institute here in Champaign-Urbana. Was doing training for foster grandparents in the state and heading up a program there.
And so this kind of insensitive behavior and language was very uncharacteristic.
Very uncharacteristic.
Right. So you knew something was wrong. Was she aware something was wrong?
She was never aware.
Uh-huh.
She never understood it from the beginning, which has been a blessing in many ways.
Uh-huh.
And that's not unusual in terms of the reports in the caregiving groups that I've been in.
We want to talk with you about some of the resources that are available for people who suffer from frontal temporal degeneration or dementia, as well as Alzheimer's in this local community, as examples of those found that could be found elsewhere. Of course, this program is heard in Indiana as well as Illinois. But I want to give listeners a chance to call in and ask our panel of folks questions. The phone numbers, if you're in the Champaign-Urbana listening area, if it's a 217 area code, call us at 333-9455. If it's long distance, there's a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let me ask our nurse practitioner who's on the line, Carolyn Hahn-Swanson. Carolyn, when you first encounter a patient, what's the first thing you do to try to determine what the problem is, since that patient doesn't know?
Well, I think what's probably most important is the history from the family. What we do is do a thorough medical workup as well as the history of the patient and the physical exam to see what findings are positive, what things can be ruled out, and is it truly a dementia or is it another problem that is possibly reversible? A dementia cannot be reversed and is permanent. There are other behaviors that will mimic dementia or perceived to be dementia that actually are treatable. Patients could have delirium, they could have electrolyte imbalances, they could have infections, any number of things. But basically what we do is look at the more comprehensive view. I think one of the things that's important for family members or friends, whomever is bringing the patient to the clinic, is to have a very thorough history, being able to give us specific incidents and information. Things like if they tell me the patient's not acting like themselves, being able to say, what is it that's different? Are they not finishing sentences when they're talking? Are they having trouble word finding? Are they having difficulty in social situations saying things that are inappropriate? Or exactly what are the behavior changes? Are they having problems with eating, that they're eating excessively, as is common with frontal temporal dementia? And those kinds of things. So that's what we more look at, is having a good complete history is very important from the family's perspective or whomever's bringing in the patient.
This program deals with issues of values and ethics and spirituality and religion. I was interested in this topic partly because of knowing Chuck and Jan and Jan's background as a very good Catholic and Chuck being a Quaker, and they have this very sensitive religious tradition, and yet here Jan was saying things that were cruel to people, and she didn't even realize it. And it was such a shock, and trying to know how to respond and how to be helpful and what to say. And I know for family members it's particularly just agonizing. Chuck, what kind of resources have you found to help family members when someone has a disease like this?
Well, I guess I would say that the things that have been most helpful to me, of course, have been very close friends that I can call upon. But in also, what's been terribly important has been the caregiving support groups that I've been involved in.
And these are ones specifically for people with Alzheimer's or frontal FTD?
Right. I've been in three that have been focused in dementia in general, and one that's just FTD. That's a local support group here that meets here in Champaign, but it has people from Morris, Illinois, from Danville, Bloomington, Tuscola. I guess there's only two of us from Champaign-Urbana.
How did it get formed?
It got formed by a person in this community whose husband, her name's Kathy Vance, and she's an assistant director in the research grants and contracts at the university. Her husband, Tim, who has frontal temporal dementia, and working through the Illinois Frontal Temporal Dementia Association of Frontal Temporal Dementia.
And she's given you permission to say this publicly.
That we have this, yes, this group, and it's sponsored by the Illinois Association of Frontal Temporal Dementia.
Okay.
And I could even give you more information about that particular group.
So it tends to meet regularly, and people who are dealing with family members can come there and get support and information and share stories?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. That group, one would need or requested to actually call her, and her phone number is 217-493-4228. Or could call Valley Haynes at 217-260-4233, also a member of that group. And that group meets at Panera Bread Company once a month, the second Saturday of each month at 11:30.
So if there are people within driving distance of Champaign-Urbana, that would be one of the resources.
That's right. They're requested to call before attending that meeting, et cetera.
I'm sorry.
There are some national resources also.
Sure.
The FTD Support Forum, that's www.FTD Support, SUPPORT Forum, FORUM.com. There's also a Well Spouse Association, and there are two ways to contact them. One is their phone number, 1-800-838-879, and I'm sorry, we don't have the last digit, or www.wellspouse.org. There's also the Family Caregiver Alliance, which is 1-800-445-8106. Or www.caregiver.org.
Okay, thank you for that information from Carolyn Swanson from the Southern Illinois University in Springfield, where she's a nurse practitioner. We have a caller waiting on line number one. Let's go to that call. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Thank you. My mother had Alzheimer's, and both my parents had made a decision long before that to leave their bodies to the demonstrators. When we realized my mother had Alzheimer's, we decided to donate her brain in it. In fact, went to SIU. And I felt very strongly that through their research, one of the cells of my mom's brain might learn something and keep others. And I wondered if FTD was the same kind of thing, where knowing afterwards and looking at the brain was an important thing to do.
Yes, that is correct. And frontal temporal dementias can be diagnosed by symptoms, but there also are specific findings on autopsy. You are absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. We appreciate that information. Dr. Zek, how did you first get interested in this field?
Oh, I suppose you want the short story.
It is only an hour show.
Yeah, actually, I was probably interested in memory since I was a young kid. I mean, like at age 5, 6, I always had an interest in what made me tick, what made people tick. And just because of my interest in memory, it was a natural evolution to apply it to Alzheimer's disease in particular. And once you start working with clinically or in research on Alzheimer's, differential diagnosis becomes important. And when I entered the field, you know, it was overwhelmingly Alzheimer's that was being diagnosed and for the most part, properly So although we were ignorant of Lewy body dementia at that point a quarter of a century ago, and now frontal temporal dementia, I have a burning interest in it, mainly because I'm seeing so many more cases of it. In the past, maybe I'd see one or two per year, and now I've had multiple cases both this year and last year. Again, I think because of the demographics, that the baby boomers have one-third more people than the World War II generation. They are now in their 50s, and that is the age of onset for frontal temporal dementia.
Carolyn was saying earlier, do you go by Ron or Ronald? I'm sorry, I should have asked earlier.
Ron will be fine. Only Ron. My mother calls me Ronald.
All right. Ron, Carolyn was saying earlier that there's really no cure for dementias, that it's permanent. But is there a hope that a cure might be found?
Yes. I mean, it's kind of a complicated question. I believe these neurodegenerative disorders, my personal view is that, and I'm not alone in this, but are diseases of aging. So understanding aging and the aging brain is very important to the understanding of these dementias. I think the hope, I personally have hope in two regards. One is that if you're talking about, let's use Alzheimer's as an example, the bad news is that the frequency, the prevalence and incidence doubles every 5 years after age 65. So that's an exponential increase from 3% to 19% to 47% when you get into your age 85 and above. However, that's the bad news. The good news is because of that mathematics, if you could delay the onset by 5 years in the case of Alzheimer's, you would cut the prevalence in half. And similarly with frontal temporal dementia, I don't know exactly what the mathematics are, but any advance that will allow us to postpone the onset, to delay the onset, would go a long way in decreasing the number of cases with this disease. Now, having said that, in the past 5 years with respect to frontal temporal dementia, there has been an explosion of new research and information that didn't exist before. So 5 years ago, there were many cases of frontal temporal dementia that we knew if you looked at the MRI scan, there was atrophy, shrinkage of the frontal and temporal lobes of the brain, and that was one way that we further confirm the diagnosis above and beyond the presenting symptoms. But at autopsy, many cases of frontal temporal dementia, you could not find the particular type of lesion or neuropathology that was causing the atrophy. That is no longer the case. They have identified five different types of lesions that occur in different individuals, five different types of neuropathology, and they account for now well over 99% of all cases. So in the right hands, the neuropathologist, if you have frontal temporal dementia, they will be able to find one of those types of neuropathology to confirm that you had frontal temporal dementia.
And it's possible from that kind of information that something could be done to ameliorate it?
Well, or that perhaps is right.
I have to interrupt you at this point because we have a caller who's been very patient. Let me get this caller on the line with this question or comment. Line 4 from LaSalle County, Illinois. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I'm 50 years old, and I've had mental problems since I was a kid. And I used to get assaulted by my relatives, some of them, because of it. And then as I've gotten older, I've become more alienated, and I find myself, like, wandering around railroad tracks and talking to myself, you know, at night, just walking the railroad tracks, you know, it's because it's quiet. And is it possible that I've had relatives that died from Alzheimer's? My maternal grandmother died from that, and she was very good to me. Is it possible, you know, that I've been in the mental hospital like 10 times? Of course, they cut you loose, and I'd just like to hear your thoughts on any possibilities along those lines.
Thank you for the call. Of course, it's impossible to do a diagnosis by phone with such limited information, but perhaps you could mention someone here. Our clinical neuropsychologist could suggest some resources or some ways that people who might be wondering about themselves, where they could go for diagnosis.
Okay. One, you can't do a diagnosis, obviously, over the phone. But
sure.
If I understood the caller's description, his mental health problems have been longstanding. So that if he was wondering whether he has frontal temporal dementia, although having longstanding mental problems doesn't prevent you from developing a frontal temporal dementia, the more likely it would seem parsimonious explanation is that he has some type of psychiatric disorder, and therefore he should be receiving psychiatric help to, one, properly get a proper psychiatric diagnosis, and then appropriate treatment. And the treatment might be, in part, pharmacological, an appropriate medication to treat the particular symptoms and diagnosis he may have. But in addition, there are also non-pharmacological treatments, behavioral treatments, psychotherapies, cognitive therapies, supportive therapies. So I think it's important in general to get a proper diagnosis in order for there to be appropriate treatment and to avail oneself of the resources that are available, the mental health resources and supportive services, including perhaps support groups, as were mentioned earlier.
And since we have a social work professor in the studio here in Champaign-Urbana, I know you may not know what's available in LaSalle County, Chuck Cowger, but in general, what could a person do? Perhaps they don't have financial resources to pay us for a psychiatrist and so forth, but what might be available for listeners?
Well, obviously, local community mental health centers are most likely the best resource.
There might be a county mental health center? Okay.
Unfortunately, with our state budget, we're closing down so many of our resources, such as group homes in the mental health field in this state. So our resources are going to be tough for people who don't have rather unusual financial resources of their own to pay for it.
Does the new national health insurance program possibly offer a way for people to get help?
Well, it's going to require mental health services. I'm sorry, I can't give you the details on that.
Okay.
I think if we're addressing the issue of where do people go if they're concerned about their memory or cognition, and typically and commonly you would start with your primary care provider, they would likely know the resources in your local community. If not, you can go to the Alzheimer's Association, can refer you to resources in the different local communities. If I'm understanding correctly, your listening area is Illinois, Indiana.
Yes.
Indiana University has a National Alzheimer's Center, as well as in the Chicago area, was it Northwestern and Rush, St. Luke's Press, Rush University. And then here at SIU, we have the Memory and Aging Center. We're a state facility. The other facilities are national facilities. But generally, if you go to whomever is your primary care provider, and also just due to supply and demand issues, there are more people with cognitive impairment issues than there are specialists in all the specialty centers. So oftentimes these people are treated in early stages by their primary care providers.
Thank you for that information. We do have another caller waiting. Before we go to that, let me give the phone numbers again for others who'd like to ask a question. And I want to introduce our guests again as well. The numbers are 333-9455 in the Champaign-Urbana listening area. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. And that includes people who are listening online at will.illinois.edu. And if you've missed part of this program, it will be archived in about a week at that same website, will.illinois.edu. You can put /keepingthefaith. Leave the G out of keeping, and you can hear this program in its entirety as well as other programs that might interest you. Our guests today are Dr. Ron Zeck, Z-E-C, Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Neurology, and Carolyn Hahn-Swanson, a nurse practitioner both from the Southern Illinois University Med School, which is in Springfield, Illinois, and in our studio here in Champaign-Urbana, Dean Emeritus Chuck Cowger. We have a caller on line one. Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. For years now, almost 50, I have been dealing with obsessive compulsive disorder. And the person from LaSalle, the gentleman from LaSalle who talked about how often he's been in mental hospitals and he's dealt with this forever and ever, sometimes obsessive-compulsive disorder is not recognized. And one thinks one is schizophrenic because you do things that don't seem what other people do. And so I just thought I would suggest to the man from LaSalle that I think that he might want to And being sent to a mental hospital is totally useless because, you know, for years they didn't even know what it was, and so they might treat it as depression or as schizophrenia. But I have a suggestion if he has available online. There is the International Obsessive Compulsive Foundation. And I'm looking through my newsletter, and I do not see an email. Another problem.
But a person could search for that at the International Obsessive Compulsive Foundation. That's helpful.
Right.
Thank you.
It even might be the International Obsessive Compulsive Disorder Foundation. They keep changing their names. And another thing is autism. Again, people did not understand autism, and so, you know, they just confused it with depression and other things. And so getting a good diagnosis and getting the proper medication is really important.
Well, thank you very much. That's very helpful, and you've given some information that may be helpful to others. Thank you for your call. We're about halfway through our program, and I need to identify the station, which is WILL 580 AM, and we're also being heard at 90.9 FM HD3 if you have an HD radio, which is a wonderful thing to have. And again, also online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Today we're talking about frontal temporal dementia, or it's sometimes called frontal temporal degeneration. And resources available for caregivers and trying to understand this disease better. Support for these programs has been provided for many years from the University YMCA here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. There will not be a Know Your University lecture this week at the Y or a Friday forum because of spring break. They will start up again the following week. However, the Y is open over spring break, and community people or people in the area who would like to see the current art exhibit at the Y, it'll be there till April 1st. It's 23 portraits by Jason Patterson of influential African-American women with roots in the Champaign-Urbana and University of Illinois communities. That's available to be seen on the first floor of the Y, but the Y now has a nice elevator to make it handicap accessible. So even if it were elsewhere, you could see it. But it's right on the first floor in the main lounge, and it's a very fascinating exhibition. Coming up on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead, Next week, I'll be traveling, seeing grandchildren in Philadelphia, but Don Nolan will be a guest host, as he often is here. He'll be talking about the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation and the new idea store that they have that supports public K through 12 schools here in Champaign-Urbana. Gail Rost, the executive director of the foundation, will be here, and perhaps Carol Jo Morgan as well. That's March 27 here on Keeping the Faith. April 3rd, we have a very interesting program about Doctor Who and genocide, which is a chapter in a very recent book on Doctor Who and philosophy that has the subtitle Bigger on the Inside. The authors of that chapter, Mark Wardecker and Ed Webb, will be talking with us on April 3rd. Charlene Watts is our guest April 10th, talking about beyond partisanship. How can there be cooperation over some very important social issues in our time? And April 17, the director of the Spurlock Museum, Wayne Pittard, will be our guest, talking about the various religion exhibits in that World Heritage Museum here at the University of Illinois Spurlock Museum. In May, we have two musical guests, Somi, with her African roots music, and John Ellis, a jazz tenor sax artist. We'll be talking about the value of music with those folks in May. Well, let's get back to our guest today. Chuck Cowger, when your wife Jan was finally diagnosed correctly with FTD, what difference did that make?
Well, it made a considerable difference in terms of just having a better understanding and knowing what we were dealing with. When this all started, I just thought, oh, I'll just find a clinical trial somewhere and we'll solve this. As time went on, I realized how naive that was. I'd like to make a comment about the progressive nature of FTD. The Association of Frontal Temporal Dementia has just changed its name to Frontal Temporal Degeneration. And I see
to give an emphasis on that progressive
the fact
nature
that it is in fact progressive, and it
gets worse.
It gets worse, yeah. And there's really nothing we can do about it getting worse
at present. Yeah.
At present.
Yeah. What does that mean in terms of people's behavior?
It means quite a bit as it relates to how caregivers adjust to it, respond to it. That I still see people and say, well, haven't you tried the carrot treatment yet? And a carrot juice treatment, I guess that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And that caregivers coming to terms with the whole fact that just every month, especially with spouses, every month you're going to lose a little bit more of this loved one, that you can't really properly grieve because the person's still there, that it's terribly emotionally draining to lose a little bit month after month after month,
right.
Come to terms with what it means to take care of your own life and the difficulty in doing that, which is extremely difficult and complex and one would think would be simple and a common thing that one reads in the literature and hears from friends and professionals, you got to take care of yourself. But that's terribly difficult to do.
How do you do it when someone can't be left alone?
If you're trying
to have them at home.
I thought that I was doing this pretty well, but all of a sudden I realized in the previous 2 years I'd never been out at night.
Uh-huh.
And we came back to Champaign-Urbana partly because we love the Krannert Center.
And the music
and the music
theater, sure.
And how difficult it is to keep a life of your own and not have the disease control your life. In the caregiving groups, my observation has been that there's been essentially, this is a rather crude taxonomy, but those people who have a Pollyannish notion about caregiving, and this is my destiny, and being able to give this care is a gift, and it's a gift for me to give to my spouse, and a gift. My spouse has helped all of us understand things better, and it's an honor, and this sort of thing. Those people crash sooner or later, has been my observation.
It just gets to be too much.
It just gets to be too much. But it's even more troubling for the people who feel victimized and have a self-pity sort of thing, and a poor me, and why did it have to happen to us, that they end up having a rather miserable life in trying to deal with it.
God did it to me. I must be being punished,
that's right,
or something.
There must be. Yeah, that's right. And sort of my observation is sort of a third alternative is the people who are the Stoics, sort of like the Stoics that I grew up with in rural community in southern Illinois, that you just do what you have to do. You don't like it, but you have to do it, and it's your responsibility, and life goes on, and there are other people who have worse situations than you, and so you just do it. And those people seem to handle it pretty well in comparison, et cetera. And I've been impressed by that. And I must say I'm biased toward that position now because I've realized over a period of time that's sort of where I have come out being you do what you have to do, and life goes on.
But it gets very tough when institutionalization has to be considered.
Well, that I find probably in the four caregiving groups I've been at, that's been the most powerful kinds of discussions and explorations that have gone on. And I've just gone through it in the last month, and I can't tell you how difficult it is. The notion that people have, and I still was struggling with this after two heart surgeries.
Right. Trying to care for your wife.
Yeah. And telling people and over again that you can't keep doing this. You're going to die before your wife or before your husband. And yet,
right.
I was still finally. Because professionals sort of got a hold of me and shook me and said, you got to stop this.
Let's talk to one of those professionals, Carolyn Hahn Swanson, a nurse practitioner at Southern Illinois University Med School, who has this as a specialty. When you're talking with family members who are caregivers, what do you tell them about when they may have to make this decision to put their loved one in a place where they can get 24-hour-a-day care?
That decision is generally a very individualized family decision and has many, many variables. I think the priorities that families have to consider are probably, number one is safety of the patient. You know, are we able to at home provide a safe environment? And then two is realistic.
Particularly if they could walk out the door and not know where they are.
Right, and there are some resources that are available to help with that. But then secondly is looking at the resources. And, you know, that varies vastly among patients. You know, are we a family that we have five children and five in-laws and multiple grandchildren that we can rotate this and everyone takes their turn for so many hours a week and we can cover this? Are we a family of an only child who I can't do this 24/7? Are we a family of empty nesters who our children all now have relocated to different areas? And so geographically it's myself, my spouse who has an illness, and many of our friends who are similar in age and health status as we are, that don't have a lot of energy and resources to help us as well. Are we a rather resourceful family in terms of having the resources to hire in-home help? What are the state resources that are available for in-home help and the various programs? And that varies from area to area and from family to family. But I think the biggest priorities for families to consider in making those decisions are, one, what is the safety of the patient? And two is, what are our resources and what realistically can we do?
Let me ask our clinical neuropsychologist, Dr. Ron Zeck. When you're talking with families and they're in these difficult situations, are there any are there medicines that help? I mean, what kind of resources are available from doctors?
Well, with respect to frontal temporal dementia, there's no FDA-approved medication as of yet. There are actually many clinical trials that are now ongoing, and it's relatively recent. Unlike with Alzheimer's disease, there are several medications that are available that purportedly have at least modest benefits in some individuals. But with FTD, there's no FDA-approved medications. Now, medications may be used for targeted symptom relief, like perhaps an anti-anxiety agent or an antidepressive or perhaps even an antipsychotic agent in low doses to see if it works and if side effects are minimized. with respect to the language subtype of FTD, speech therapy, language therapy, using assistive devices are helpful, although today we seem to be emphasizing the behavioral subtype of FTD. And however, most importantly, I think that I've come to see is, as was spoken by the gentleman whose wife has FTD, is both for Alzheimer's disease, frontal temporal dementia, all of these neurodegenerative disorders, although there's a lot of research going on, and we've learned a lot about the underlying mechanisms in the brain, as yet there is no cure. There are no very effective treatments. There are no preventive strategies, and those are probably not in the near future. Therefore, caregiving is very important. Training caregivers, supporting caregivers, giving respite to caregivers, because that is going to be what we're going. That's going to be a major pillar of dealing with the ever increasing number of dementia cases as our population ages.
And we've had a question come in from someone who didn't want to be on the air. Let me ask you about that, since it's related to this, Dr. Zach. Risperidone, I guess Risperdal is a trade name, is being used apparently in some cases for management of Alzheimer's disease patients.
That particular medication does not have an FDA approval for dementia patients, although it is not uncommon in practice that it is used for some behavioral symptoms in patients with dementia.
And what about FTD?
I would include frontal temporal as one of those types.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that.
And in general, the medications that are used are selected very carefully on an individual basis, based on the symptoms the patient is exhibiting, and it oftentimes is sort of a trial of which medication matches with this patient, because there are no clinical study trials for us to say this particular medication is effective in with frontal temporal dementia.
Okay. What about spiritual resources in families that are dealing as a caregiver for someone like this? Can religious communities be of help? What might they think of to do to be supportive? Chuck, I know in your friend's meeting, people are concerned about you as well as about Jan. How have they responded in ways that were actually helpful?
Well, because I had a hard time asking for help, I ended up setting up a system where we had an emergency fund that was used for homeless people. And so members of the Friends meeting would come and sit with Jan, and I would then pay into the fund the going rate for home health care while they did that, which gave me an opportunity to go to such things as the theater, which I like.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to ask someone to come and sit with your spouse when you want to go to a play. It's not hard to ask friends to come when you have an emergency.
Sure.
But it is to do other things. So they would come and sit. I would then pay the fund. So they felt like they were contributing to the fund and to me.
I see.
And I felt comfortable in asking people to come and help.
Uh-huh.
And it worked out really quite well.
In terms of your asking spiritual resources, I think that varies with the communities. I've seen in some communities that there are church congregations who actually offer respite care, which is like a 2 to 4 hour period of time on specific days of the week that families can bring the patient over and the families can go and do whatever they would like. So I think there's different aspects of the spiritual involvement from churches specifically. There's also the perspective of the spiritual support to the patient and to the family, and in utilizing the clergy, counselors, or other people of religious backgrounds, of whatever religious type that you choose most comfortable in communicating with, that can be very helpful and very resourceful. And I think what's available in the community is going to be very different. As I said, we've had some congregations who take anyone of any denomination. I've also had some people, patients tell me that the communities they live in will take members of their specific congregations only. There are also national groups that will do things from different religious organizations, and that varies with what the religious organization is as to the services they're willing to support and contribute to.
We've mentioned several resources, but one we have not mentioned is the mayoclinic.com/health/frontotemporal dash dementia. That's one option. Of course, people who have computer access can find these and many others. Let's talk just a little bit about what some of the different symptoms are for FTD from just Alzheimer's in general. Dean Kauger, what would you, from having experienced this yourself very recently?
Right. Some things distinguish from my wife's behavior and what I've learned since in terms of common symptoms that are distinguished. There's a tendency to repeat the same activity or say the same word over and over again when it no longer makes sense. Repeatable compulsive behaviors, like my wife would open the refrigerator every time she walked by it, turn the lights on and off maybe 500 times a day, go from door to door to look out to see if anybody was there. Impulsive acts, occasionally some sexual. Social disinhibition, acting impulsively without considering how others perceive the behavior.
The example you gave earlier of describing someone as fat, which
that's
she saw.
Right. Compulsive eating, which also goes with occasionally, and it's actually in the literature now, and I learned quickly to know some of the security at the local Meijer store because Jan would try to put Snicker bars in her pockets without paying for them. Impulsive buying is quite characteristic. Stereotypical and repetitive behaviors such as hand rubbing or, in my wife's case, hand clapping and beating on things in rhythm.
Drumming, but no violence to people?
We have not experienced that, nor do I. I don't believe that's a common characteristic. Emotional changes, emotionally flat or exaggerated or improper, an emotional blunting, a lack of empathy that one has for others. And, of course, the language difficulties with aphasia. For the last 6 months, my wife has not been able to speak at all, nor understand any verbal directions. She understands if I point to things. And even a year ago, she was still reading music and playing the piano.
So that's been a very obvious degeneration.
Degeneration.
And if we could go to Dr. Zek for some of these other that have to do with the language types of frontal temporal dementia, what are some of those things that distinguish it from Alzheimer's?
Yes, first I'd like to just mention that he listed all the classical symptoms of the behavioral type.
Yes, that's right.
Plays them all. There is the semantic dementia versus progressive non-fluent aphasia. And with semantic dementia, there's loss of comprehension and also naming difficulty. And it is a progressive condition, and it may also be associated with these behavioral symptoms, but there's the predominance in loss of the understanding of language. So they will have trouble with naming, they will have trouble with comprehension, but their speech will be fluent and it will be grammatically correct, even though it will be relatively empty in meaning. The progressive non-fluent aphasia, there is problems with syntax and grammar and problems with phonology, such that there are what's known as phonemic paraphasias, which basically means the person is mispronouncing words.
We're down to our last 60 seconds.
So there's problems with expression of language in the one condition, the progressive non-fluent aphasia, and problems with comprehension and naming in the semantic dementia.
And
what determines which of these symptoms are manifested is the part of the brain that is most affected.
And one thing that I had a question about we didn't get to at all was the Pick's disease, that's still considered a subcategory of which of these?
Frontal temporal
okay.
Dementia in general. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. I want to thank our guests. We've had Dean Emeritus Chuck Cowger from the School of Social Work at the University of Missouri in Columbia, who has been our guest in studio, sharing his personal story with his wife, Jan. And we've had by phone Carolyn Hahn Swanson, the nurse practitioner at Southern Illinois University in Springfield, and Dr. Ronald Zek, Z-E-C, associate professor of psychiatry and neurology, also at Southern Illinois University for 27 years there in the Department of Neurology. I'm Steve Shoemaker, your usual host for Keeping the Faith, although next week Don Nolan will be sitting here in the studio talking about the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation and the Idea Store that helps support that very good foundation that helps the public schools K through 12 in the Champaign-Urbana area. That may be an example of what could be done in other communities as well to support public education. April 3rd, our guest here on Keeping the Faith will be Mark Wardecker in the studio and by phone Ed Webb from Ohio talking about Doctor Who and genocide. Should be a very interesting program. I'm Steve Shoemaker again, and thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Provena Covenant Medical Center and Busey Bank. Join them in supporting WILL. For every online pledge made between now and March 20th, Provena and Busey will donate the cost of 9 meals to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. Make a pledge now at willpledge.org.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3.